Hello, and welcome to the Austin Therapy Podcast. I'm Kate, and you should know who I am if you've made it this far. And I'm joined by
Teresa, who hopefully you also know who I am by now.
And today we are talking about the 2005 adaptation of Pride and Prejudice.
Also, we're back! Yay!
Yeah, Teresa ran away from home for a bit, and now Teresa's home. For what, 3 more days? Teresa's running away again, but we'll have internet contact, so we will start recording the other one. But we'll let you know when we do that. So, Teresa, guess my first question is, what did you think?
It's a weird movie. So, to give our listeners full context on this, we watched it together at our parents' house, and partway through, both of our parents decided to make a ton of noise. So there's also like just a moment where I'm pretty sure it was not a funny moment, but everything surrounding us made me laugh. So that might have added to the level of absurdity that I thought this movie was, but it's a little weird.
Yeah, there are definitely moments in this movie where it's like, what? Why did they make that choice? This is weird.
And I took some notes while we were watching because I wanted to be able to remember. And it's been a couple days since we watched, so my notes might not make a ton of sense anymore, but we're gonna give it our best shot. I liked the movie. I will say that. It was weird, but I liked it. I don't know if it's gonna be a comfort movie for me that I like turn on in the background all the time. I'd watch it again, but it wouldn't be a go-to. I have go-to rom-coms. This would not be my go-to rom-com.
Right.
And you did remind me halfway through that it is technically a rom-com because I was like, why is this weird and funny?
Because Pride and Prejudice is weird and
Yeah,
funny.
they added layers of weird and funny to the movie.
That's part of the magic of having a movie. And the reason that I got you to watch the 2005 before the 1995 was because I wanted, and we haven't watched the 1995 miniseries yet. So I will then be asking you which one you enjoyed better.
You like the mini series better.
Well, it's 6 episodes, so they have more space to tell the story. So they tell the story with much more depth. And my critique of the 2005 adaptation, which has lasted through all of my memory, is that it just goes so fast.
Yeah.
There are moments where it's like, why are they talking this quickly? Slow down. You're supposed to deliver that line with more emotion. And that it just felt like sometimes they were speeding through the script to get to the next scene. And I love the movie, but I prefer the 1995. But again, they're different formats, so they can tell the story in different ways.
I do remember saying to you at one point something I don't even quite remember what it was that happens. I think it might have been Colin's visit. And I was like, that is literally 6 chapters of
Oh,
this
yeah.
book. And it happens so quickly. And you know what it was? It was Colin's and Charlotte getting engaged and their relationship piece of it, which in the book felt so big. But in the movie, it was Charlotte was so much of a side character and feel a particular affection for her in the same way, because we just didn't get that same depth of her. So things like that felt like they were very rushed and fast. Other times I was like, yeah, sometimes those chapters were really long and drawn out, and I don't know why we got an explanation of these things for 6 chapters when I just wanted them to be in love already. So I could see why a miniseries might be a format that I might like also, but I have to watch it.
Yeah, I will say in terms of Charlotte, her speech that she gives,
Yes.
where like I'm 27 and a burden to my parents. The Austin community loves that speech and it gets printed on people's 27th birthday cakes and things like that. So like, yes, they didn't give Charlotte the same depth, but like they made a lot of weird changes and most of the characters don't get the same depth.
Yes.
In terms of like particular changes that they made, what do you think about the exclusion of specific characters like Mrs. Hurst and Mr. Hurst?
I did note that Bingley only has one sibling, and I was okay with Mrs. Hurst and Mr. Hurst being kept out of it. They don't actually do a ton. I know one of my favorite lines is they're eating breakfast, and Mr. Hurst is just like, porridge. I know I really enjoyed that in the book. I don't think they further the plot in any way. So I get why, particularly, I imagine for a period piece like this, where costuming for more people and getting everything right for another character that's not going to advance the plot is a lot of time and energy and money for a production like this.
Well, and that aside, you've already got a hard enough time telling the story with the characters you have to include. You don't necessarily need to include those other characters. I do think that they add to the story within an adaptation like the miniseries or even the book, but they're not necessary for something where you're telling the quick story.
And I think there were definitely some character choices that they made on like how they portrayed certain characters that I was like, what is going on here?
Okay.
So maybe we should do like a breakdown of those things.
Yeah.
So I thought Keira Knightley, good choice. I know she got an Oscar nomination for it.
I think so.
I liked her. I thought she was a good Lizzie. I did at one point, I was like, wait, Colin Firth is not Darcy in this? And you'd be like, no, that's the miniseries. I thought Darcy, they wrote him to be even more awkward than Darcy actually is. And I think they were trying to play up the socially awkward part of Darcy, but at times it just came across like not socially awkward, just awkward and weird.
Yeah, it felt very much like in this adaptation, they were trying to get you to empathize with Darcy earlier on.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that might be part of the like quickness of how this has to happen, of because they don't have as much time to draw it out. They want you to like him a little bit earlier so that when it comes time, you're not just, wait, why? What? Huh?
Yeah. But he seems like, even when Lizzie asks him, do you dance? And he's like, not if I can help it. It's not delivered in a malicious sort of way. It's not delivered with any sort of meanness or shortness. It's just a matter of fact thing that he's like, I'm just answering your question. And so he seems to be less prideful.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, just more awkward. And Darcy is always that line of kind of sometimes what he's feeling is justified and also sometimes he's a jerk.
Yeah.
And the point is supposed to be that even if he is awkward, he's still a jerk and needs to work on that part of himself.
And he does work on that part of himself, which was what we see in the book. I don't think there's enough time in this movie for us to actually get that he worked on himself.
Yeah, Darcy doesn't really have a growth arc. It's more of a Lizzie didn't truly understand him arc, which I feel misses the point of Darcy somewhat as a character. But it's okay in the adaptation that is the film. It works.
Yes, I agree. So the two of them, they're fine. I liked them as a unit together. And I think they did bring in some of that teasing playfulness. And Lizzie has such biting wit in this, which reflects her in the book too. I thought that Lizzie was written really well in that way. I thought Mr. and Mrs. Bennet, again, just how I pictured them.
Okay, so I will remind you that there were some times when they were portrayed as affectionate or more intimate than you assumed, that you were like, but that's not how they are.
Yes. So I guess I should clarify. Individually, they were how I pictured them to be, although they definitely give Mrs. Bennet a drunk storyline in this of like she just drinks too much and that's why she's a little out of hand and a little out of line, which felt a little weird. And yeah, together, there were moments where I was like, why are they insinuating that they're going off to have sex now? These two don't really like each other. Some of those moments felt a little bit weird, but I thought they were both as I expected them to be. Mr. Bennet was definitely portrayed a little bit more as the loving father than I think he is in the book, which had myself thinking about how you had told me that there are a lot of people in the fandom who really like Mr. Bennet, and it made me wonder if this adaptation, part of why people really like Mr. Bennet is because of it.
They don't really portray the neglect that he was basically absent from a lot of what his daughters did, didn't really direct their lives much at all, stayed in his little cubbyhole. He seems to be more part of the action in this adaptation. I think, again, works well for the adaptation, and it's just a take on Pride and Prejudice. Not the take that I would take, because these two don't like each other, and that's part of the story. I feel like that they're a warning in terms of marrying without being thoughtful.
Mm-hmm. They're what Lizzie doesn't want her relationship to look like.
Right. They're very affectionate in this movie and seem to genuinely like each other, even if they are teasing each other. So it's, in terms of the adaptation, it's just a change, I guess. Yeah. And it takes things in a different lens.
And in that light, I think another couple that we talked a lot about in the book was the Gardners, who we don't see a ton of in the movie, but they were much older So I didn't get that same sense of Lizzie being close with Mrs. Gardner in the way that she is in the book.
She's an aunt. That's entirely her role. Whereas in the books, she's an aunt and a friend.
And the Gardners in this adaptation act as a tool to bring Lizzie to Pemberley, but they don't really serve a ton of other role in it.
Yeah, they took the piece of them that is the plot device to get her where she needs to go. Part of why they're important is that Darcy is sweet to them and kind to them, and he is different, and these are her relatives that he was worried about, and it demonstrates that Darcy has shifted his perspective. But again, they would actually have to have established that piece of Darcy, and like, so it's okay, it flows.
Yeah, it does. I think the part where I found it most glaring was actually when Lydia is the one to tell Lizzie, oh, Darcy paid for my entire wedding and sorted all of this out, because we know in the book she doesn't know that.
Right. Yeah, she just thinks that Darcy showed up. She doesn't know how that Darcy paid for everything
and kind of doesn't think anything of it. But in this adaptation, she's the one who knows it, which for some reason that just felt a little off to me. And I think it's because I have such an affection for the Gardners in the book, and that part of Mrs. Gardner's interaction I have such an affection for, that that felt a little weird to me.
It's also, I think, an aspect of the movie that minimizes Wickham's wickedness.
Yeah, we'll get to Wickham in a second, but yeah.
And then also that the Gardners didn't have kids.
Yeah, which also was a little strange, but because they portrayed them so much older, it kind of made sense that, like, yeah, of course they're not going to have little kids running around because they're old, and older than Lizzie's parents. Yeah. Who have 20-year-olds. So it kind of made sense, but I also was like, these are not the same characters that we learned to love in the book. Should we talk about Wickham?
I don't know. Are there any other characters before there that you're like...
I mean, we should talk about Collins.
Okay.
In this. So when Collins first appeared, I wrote down, he looks better with the hat. Because there's the scene, he shows up and he's wearing a hat. And you're like, okay, he's not attractive, but like, he's okay. And then he takes the hat off and you're like, what is going on with his hair? There was just something about him where I was like, the one redeeming quality was your hat. And even though Collins still has lots of his Collins essence, and I still wrote down fuck off Collins in my notes, I don't think he hit in the same way he does in the book of being so...
misogynistic.
Yeah, misogynistic and repulsive. He was annoying.
Yeah, there are moments in this adaptation that almost like try and make Collins seem sweet, like where he's at the ball and he's got the flower and he's like supposed to be sad because Lizzie's occupied with other things, and it's like he didn't actually have feelings for anyone. Marriage was just the thing to check off his list because Lady Catherine told him to.
Right. Marriage was a tool to advance his status in Lady Catherine's eyes.
Yeah. So yeah, Collins is an odd duck in this one. Yeah. Anyway, we'll get to more of him, I'm sure. Yeah.
We briefly touched on Lydia. I did note that they set her up to be her mother, which in the book is not unreasonable of a crossover assessment, but the way they set it up is she might also have a drinking problem when they're sitting at dinner and she grabs Lizzie's wine glass after hers. And I just thought that that was an interesting device that they chose to use in this movie, was the role of alcohol and drinking and how it impacted Mrs. Bennet and how it may impact Lydia.
Which is interesting. Alcohol in modern adaptations often gets used that way. And it almost sometimes seems as like an excusing thing. Like you said with Mrs. Bennet, of kind of, this is who she is when she drinks, but she's not always this way. Well, no, she is.
She is always this way.
Yeah.
I thought Jane was great. Very much that everyone is lovely. Everyone I should care about. And you can't help but root for her. Bingley, great puppy energy.
So good.
Those two fit their characters in the book to the adaptation so well. So those two I thought were great. We didn't see a ton of Kitty and Mary. I felt really sad for Mary though.
Yeah, definitely try and ship Collins and Mary a lot.
Yeah, which was weird.
I mean, that's a common ship because she's pious and religious and he is as well. And the getting of those two together, they would be, she'd be like, you want to read the sermons to me? Please do. Let's spend the night doing this.
Do you really think so?
No, because I don't actually think Collins wants someone who is like him. I think he wants someone who is
easily controlled.
Charlotte is a decent spouse and I feel bad for her.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But yeah, in this adaptation, they definitely made Charlotte and Collins more cozy.
Yep.
And Charlotte's much happier.
I'm debating if we go to Catherine de Bourgh or Wickham next in this conversation.
Let's go Catherine de Bourgh.
Okay. So what I wrote down was Judi Dench in my notes, because I don't know if I could get over the fact that it was Judi Dench. And there was one moment, and I think it's the first moment that we see her as Catherine de Bourgh, where all I could picture was her character in Cats. I haven't seen Cats, but I assume very different vibes, but that's all I could picture in my head was her in Cats. And that kind of stayed with me throughout it, if I'm honest. But I thought she played her pretty well as Catherine de Bourgh. A little weird that she shows up in the middle of the night instead of like early morning. I know in the book it's still an inappropriate time, but there is no way someone of Catherine de Bourgh's status is like, I'm gonna drive through the night and show up at your house in the middle of the night. She's a little more planful and thoughtful than that, so she might drive through the night, but she'll sleep in the carriage so she gets there early in the morning.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll get to, as we go through your notes, some of those really weird scenes that I think there are pieces of this movie that would have, I think, made a really good horror movie.
Yes. Well, and yeah, there was definitely one scene where I wrote down, this wasn't towards the end of this movie. I think it was the beginning of like a zombie apocalypse movie or something.
Which maybe we'll get to that, Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
It's true.
So, Wickham.
Yeah. One, he was not as attractive as I pictured him in the books. Like, he's fine. He's nice looking, but I guess in my mind, he was a bit of a standout amongst the regimen as an attractive guy, and he's not.
And I think the thing is, because I love the actor in many other things and will drool over him in other roles, I think in this, it's almost like he was made to seem plain. And the thing is that Wickham is supposed to be universally attractive to heterosexual women. He's supposed to be the type of attractive that men are jealous of. He's supposed to be the one that you walk into the room and all eyes turn to him because he's so pretty. And that wasn't the vibe that I got off of this character in this adaptation.
Yeah, he's generic. And I think that he doesn't come off as charismatic, which I think is part of that universal charm to it, is he's just, yeah, he's not as charismatic in this, that I don't get that coming across from him as much. He seems almost affectionate at the start, or affectionate's not even the right word, maybe jovial. Like, he's engaging, but I don't know if he rises to a different level.
I think part of that, and a side character that they cut, is Denny, who, when you're thinking about it, you're kind of like, Denny? But Denny is his best friend in the militia, and there's that idea within that friendship of Wickham's charm with not just women and not just the Bennett women, but universally with men and with women, and this perspective that he's also attractive as a friend, as a companion.
Right,
and
he's a smooth talker.
Right.
He can talk to anyone. He can talk through any situation.
People like spending time with him.
Yeah.
And I think also because they cut Mrs. Phillips, who's the other aunt, we don't get as many of those casual interactions that deepens the sort of Wickham talking and telling a story, and her aunt falling for him, and everybody being like, Wickham, Wickham, Wickham. It's just kind of like, yeah, Wickham was there. There was some weirdness with Darcy, and then Wickham was gone, and we kind of forget about him again.
And then he marries Lydia, and you're kind of like, wait, who was that guy? Why is he marrying Lydia?
Yeah, and it's a weird thread of the story that doesn't feel serious enough.
Well, because having read the book, we know how pivotal it is to Darcy and Lizzie's relationship, that storyline. I think that's where it feels like it misses.
I guess I never got the impression that Lizzie had feelings for Wickham. It was just kind of like this weird guy that we met on a walk and we kind of had a conversation.
Right. He was a nice guy to maybe talk to.
Like, and he gave me some info, and then he didn't show up at the ball. Ho-hum.
Yeah, you don't feel that sense of connection between the two two of them as much, where it does feel so much more depth and gravity when he ends up with Lydia. Wait, you used to be flirting with me and we maybe had a thing. Oh, also you had a thing with Darcy's sister, which they rewrote that storyline a little bit too, of he came and promised my sister he was going to marry her and then didn't. Versus what we know happens in the book of, no, he like secretly made sure she was away from Darcy to seduce her. And Darcy found out about it and had to split them up because he was only after the money.
Yeah.
You don't get that sense of Wickham's true motivations, I think, is the issue.
Which at the end, there's a few times when Wickham, now that he's married to Lydia, he doesn't seem charming. Like in the book, he's supposed to come back after they got married and be charming and just pretend that the world's fine. No, he seems aggressive in this adaptation, which I appreciate the nod to the fact that Wickham probably would be an abusive partner, but he's a different character.
Yeah. He doesn't act as, and I don't know if this is the right term, but the term I want to use is the right foil in this story.
Well, because he is. He's supposed to be the guy who presents really well, but is actually all awful. And Darcy's supposed to be the guy who presents really badly, but is actually gooey and you would love him on the inside.
And I think some of that is just they had to tell the story so quickly that you can't get as much of that depth in there.
Yeah. Should we go through some of the notes and talk them through piece by piece?
Yeah. I mean, I did wonder, so they have this opening scene of Lizzie walking and she's reading a book. And I wrote down, I wonder what book she's reading.
So if anybody knows, tell us, what book was she reading?
We want to know. So I wrote that down. I wrote down that I actually imagined the Bennett house to be a little bit grander.
So this is a critique of this adaptation, that they make the Bennets much poorer than they actually are. There wouldn't have been pigs in their house. They would have had servants, at least more servants than they had. They made it seem like there was this huge difference when they were wealthy people.
Right. The difference was they didn't have a male heir, not that at this very present moment, they didn't have money. And when it struck me the most, actually, was when we went to Colin's house and it just looks nicer. And you're like, no, that house is not supposed to be as grand and as nice. And I think it was the wallpaper, because they have very like nice blue wallpaper in the sitting room.
Yeah.
And it just like makes it feel a little bit more upscale, a little bit more posh. And that should be the Bennett house. That's the house that it should feel like. But it feels a little drab in the Bennett house.
Well, it's dirty.
Yeah.
And I think they're like trying to emphasize the difference between Darcy and Elizabeth in terms of status. But again, that's not actually the point in the book. The point is that they are, in terms of status, equal. And Darcy isn't saving her from her current life. Her current life is quite good. He's saving her because of the structural patriarchal system that means that women cannot have income after their father dies unless they have someone male in their life who can come and take care of them. And that's supposed to be the point, not the point that she's poor and she's being rescued. And not that they necessarily are poor even in this adaptation, but it is a critique that I've heard from other people as well around the fact that they make the Bennets less wealthy than they actually are.
Well, and it makes me think about the speech in the book, or not really even speech, the response in the book that Lizzie gives to Catherine de Bourgh when she's like, you're not of good enough status. And Liz is like,
his father was a gentleman.
Right. His father was a gentleman and I'm the daughter of a gentleman. So we're on the same status. And so I think that that gets missed in this. That felt weird. And then they go to the ball and it feels very claustrophobic to me. It also like looks like it's not in someone's house,
okay,
but instead just like a random ball hall.
The first one.
Yes. Well, all of them, but the first one especially.
Okay, the first one is an assembly.
Oh,
it is the Meriton Assembly is where they met. This is in the book. So it's not a ball. It's more like a community dance where they get together. And usually the thing about Austin does a great episode on this, but usually it's that the families in the community that are wealthy contribute money so that they can put on regular assemblies and regular dances. And it's part of that community coming together. And that's why in the book and a little bit in the movie, they talk about the country dance, because that's what this assembly and community gathering is to hoity-toity people because it's not exclusive.
Got it.
And let's talk about the assembly, though. What did you think of Darcy's entry?
Well, not just Darcy Bingley and Carolyn's entry. Awkward. It is the most awkward thing I watched in the entire movie. And there were many other awkward parts of this movie. Everyone's dancing. And then it's not even the other movies, I think, do it better.
Right.
When they, like, stop the dance, where it's a slow and the music kind of half stops but it's half going and then it stops because there's this realization that something's right. going on.
Yeah,
it's just everyone's dancing, no one's dancing,
and the music is going
stops. Yeah, and there's no sound of like everyone turning or that motion doesn't happen. It's just very stilted of dancing, no dancing, people standing there.
And I very much understand in this adaptation why Darcy would be awkward.
Yeah, it's such an awkward situation.
And it immediately puts him on display as this is a meat market. And yeah.
And also then they do this awkward walk across the entire ballroom floor and then get to the front and turn around. And you're like, what was going on? It wasn't even people stop to stare and look at them. It was a And then they get presented. It was so weird. I think it's my number one awkward moment of this movie.
Okay.
And there are other awkward moments, but that is my number one. I loved Bingley's line of, I can read.
I know, he's such a puppy.
He's trying so hard and it's really cute. Bingley in this movie, I remember when we started reading this book and I was very suspicious of him. He's going to be the bad guy, isn't he? You just know from the start of this movie, he's not the bad guy. Yeah. He's too sweet and too nice and he stays that way throughout. So I liked him a lot. Yeah. Drunk Mrs. Bennet at the dance. It's a pity she's not more handsome about Charlotte.
Right. Those are things that Mrs. Bennet would just say sober.
Yeah. Why? And I get that with that, they're also creating this moment where both Lizzie and Jane are like, Mom, stop talking. And you get to see a bit of that relationship where they're like, all right, we're going over here now. Trying to kind of redirect and do a little bit of that parenting that is written so well in the book. I think that Lizzie and her comment to Darcy about dancing, he says something about there's no one here tolerable. And she makes a comment back about dancing and tolerability.
Oh, no. So she overhears the line when she's underneath the bleachers.
Yeah.
Such a like high school moment. And they overhear him say that Lizzie is not tolerable enough to tempt him. And then they talk about later in this little weird circle conversation they're having with Bingley about poetry. He talks about how poetry chases away love. And like, that's from the book. And then he's like, so what do you suggest to encourage affection? And she says, dancing, even if one's partner is not even tolerable. And just, I heard you.
She calls him out so well. I do think I missed a little bit of giddy Lizzie spreading. Did you hear what Darcy said? Did you hear what Darcy said at the dance? She has that moment with Charlotte.
Yeah.
Which is really sweet. And I don't know if it necessarily changes anything to not have that part in there, but I do think that that's kind of a interesting, sweet moment. So then Jane goes to Netherfield and we get this funny line from Mr. Bennet of, if Jane does die, it will be a comfort in knowing it was in pursuit of Mr. Bingley. And that feels a little misplaced. And I think it's because it's not his line in the book. But then, as we know, Jane gets sick. Mrs. Bennet's like, aha, my plan worked. I don't know if I believe in the movie that she actually had a plan versus was just being weird versus in the book. I actually believed it was part of her plan to be like, we're going to force them together.
Yeah, they do soften Mrs. Bennet's sort of pushing her children towards men. And it's more of a, oh, Mom, come on, in the movie than it is her forcefully pushing her children in front of people.
And Lizzie goes, and I think we get the lovely, like, she walks there, she enters the room. I love that she gets introduced by the servant who's like, Miss Elizabeth Bennet. And she walks in, and it's just Darcy and Carolyn having breakfast, I assume, together, or tea, or whatever. And Darcy just stands. And then she's like, again, awkward silence. It's again one of those moments much more awkward than this needed to be. And she asks how Jane is. And Darcy's like, she's upstairs. And it happens twice in this movie where she asks how Jane is and someone just tells her Jane's location. That is not an answer to the question. Drives me nuts. I think Bingley's super cute in his response to how Jane's doing. And stumbly, it's good that you're here, but not good that you're sick. But like, you're welcome anytime. And he's very cute. And then we get to the evening scenes of them all hanging out together while Jane's upstairs sick. And this line from Lizzie of, Mr. Darcy is not to be teased, which for me was like, oh. But she teases him so much and he loves it.
Right, that she's pointing out that he's not to be teased, even though that in and of itself is teasing him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And just how Carolyn is so Carolyn and can't get that.
She's the embodiment of a mean girl.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Like in this adaptation, they just made her character mean.
Not even in the book, she just comes off as...
Well, she has a crush on Darcy.
Yeah. But in this, she's just like, no, I'm just going to be rude and mean about everyone. And then I loved when Mrs. Bennet and the other three sisters came to visit and the servant does the same introduction of Mrs. Bennet and Miss Bennet and Miss Bennet and Miss Bennet. I just thought it was a funny little moment that they put in of Lizzie's introduction and then their introduction and how awkward that entire interaction is. And for some reason, I don't remember Mrs. Bennet and the other sisters coming to Netherfield.
Oh, no, they come. So they come, and that's when Lizzie and Darcy have this really good back and forth about characters and the study that she does of characters, because Darcy starts talking about how she's a study of character, and she's explaining this, and he says, oh, well, in a small community, that must be difficult for you because you don't get much variety of people. And she goes on to talk about the depth that you can examine people, and then her mom gets offended by that, and her mom starts being a dick towards Darcy, and Lizzie has to be like, what is happening, and try and fix it, and Bingley has to try and be nice, and Mrs. Bennet's just being exceedingly rude, and then Lydia's like, hey, when are you gonna throw a ball? And that happens, and then we get more scenes of staying and playing cards with the Hursts. And then Lizzie's like, please, Dad, send the carriage, take us home. Because it takes a while for Jane to get better.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't remember that from the book, but as you're saying it, I'm like, that makes much more sense than they just showed up, sat for a little while,
and then took Jane home.
Yeah. Well, and Lydia was like, you should have a ball. And Bingley's like, okay. And then they left. It was a weird scene that just didn't seem super fitting.
From the book, but in a very oddly placed. The spacing, again, of we need to do this quickly.
Yeah, it's condensed. So that felt a little off. And yeah, then they leave and we get the hand flex from Darcy.
Teresa doesn't get the hand flex, guys.
I don't get it. I know it's supposed to convey that jolt of energy, I think, between the two of them when he touched her hand. And he's like, oh, but it doesn't read that way to me. It's just him being like, I have a weird hand twitch.
So for me, that's like a super sexy moment because he surprises her by helping her into the carriage. She's got that moment of what just happened? Why did Darcy touch me? And then he's walking away. And the hand flex is supposed to be like him trying to shake off his feeling. And I'm not supposed to like this girl. And that's why that moment is so, he's trying to repress his feelings and, but they're too strong. That's why I love that moment. So anyway.
Yeah, that does not read that way to me. It just reads as like they touch and he's like, I must flex my hand now. It doesn't read as like, shake her off or anything like that. It just reads as weird. And I know people really like that moment.
Oh, I love that moment. It is the reason that I will watch the adaptation and I will replay that over and over because it's such a good shorthand for what's going on, for the tension that's there, for the feelings that he has that she doesn't understand. There's so much unspoken in that scene. I just love it. So anyway, Teresa doesn't get it, guys.
I don't get it. Sorry. And then Colin shows up and he suggests, maybe I'll read to you for a few hours. And I wrote, fuck off. And then he does. And he's just himself. I love that he describes his desire to marry Jane as having captured my special attention. So creepy. Why is that line? Like, it's so weird and creepy.
I mean, Collins is weird and creepy.
It's just so strange. He's just weird and strange. And then we get a little reprieve from him and we meet Wickham.
So I will mention that Teresa did not particularly notice the excellent boiled potatoes. I had to point that out to them, that that is a line that everybody seems to pick up on, even though it's not a line from the book. Teresa was just like, potatoes.
See, this is why I don't think I consider myself a Janeite yet. I'm a fan of Jane Austen.
Fair enough.
But I don't think I meet true Janeite because these things just over my head. Missed it. And so we meet Wickham. They have the like, oh, he's this nice guy who buys Lydia a ribbon. La, la, la.
And so they're specifically in that moment where he's like pulling the coin from behind her ear. It's supposed to be a nod to the fact that he understands that she's young. He understands that she is a child still. We could do a character analysis of this Wickham in that he is still a predator, but just not in the charming narcissist way.
Yes. He doesn't come across as a narcissist in this.
Yeah, they don't give you enough opportunity to, one, like him, but also to see him spreading the story, to see him spreading lies, to see him trying to get people on his side. You don't really get that impression.
No, again, he's just kind of there. But we do get this fun scene that he's walking the Bennett's girls home, presumably, and Bingley and Darcy are headed to their house, and Jane gets all excited, like, oh, we're just about to see you at our house. How exciting. And Bingley's like, ah, I was just about to go to your house. How exciting. And we get this awkward stare between Wickham and Darcy. Darcy on horseback, Wickham standing there across a little creek.
Yeah.
Which, does this happen in the book?
They meet them in town.
Okay. I was like, it feels strange. Because then Darcy just turns his horse around and leaves.
Yeah.
It's such an awkward scene. And then Bingley's like, I guess we're leaving now.
Yeah, we were going to go to your house, but Darcy just ran away with no explanation. Gotta go.
So strange. So weird. And then we see Wickham and Lizzie together, and Lizzie's sitting, leaning against a tree. And I had this moment of like, should the two of them be alone together? There's never really that type of interaction between them where they're alone together in that way. Like in the book, when Wickham tells her all about Darcy, they're at a dinner with everyone. And again, I think doesn't build up that part of he's spreading this lie to the whole community, or
also not approached in the same sort of like, I'm trying to get you on my side sort of way. It's again, just, I don't know, it's odd.
Well, because I don't feel as, not necessarily, I didn't feel enraged for him in the book. I didn't really care, but I didn't feel as much sympathy for him as you do initially in the book when you hear about, well, Darcy took my job away and his father loved me and all of those things. You're just kind of like, well, that sucks, dude, but whatever.
He seems just kind of like an angry dude.
Yeah.
Like in the movie, he just kind of seems like a dude with a chip on his shoulder. Again, there isn't that charisma behind the character in the movie.
And then we get the Netherfield ball, which Wickham doesn't go to, as we know. And Lizzie spends a little bit of time looking for him. And then Jane is like, he's not here. And she's like, oh.
Yeah, and then she has to dance with Collins.
Which is sad. I think, actually, she dances with Darcy first.
No.
No?
She dances with Collins.
No, she doesn't.
Yes, she does. Collins is first. Collins is first. And as they're dancing, Jane and Lizzie are talking about Wickham.
Ah, okay, yes. Sorry, I wrote something about Collins later in my notes, but I didn't write about Lizzie and Collins dancing, probably because I was like, fuck off, Collins.
I like the way that they do that, of kind of like, it is very clearly being communicated to him that Lizzie has no interest.
Yeah.
If he is not cluing into this, he is purposefully not cluing into this.
Well, and even he tries to be like, we should be talking to each other. And Lizzie's just having this conversation with Jane.
She's like, I don't
care. She doesn't even listen. I don't even think she responds to him.
No.
She's just like, no, so we're still talking over here.
Yeah. And then they end the dance and he says, I would like to stay close to you throughout the night.
So creepy. And Lizzie runs away and hides from him. And then we get Creeper Darcy, just like staring and watching and creeping. And it was that Darcy in the shrubs kind of like visual that I always think of when I think of Darcy and his creeper moments. And then they dance, and there's such an intensity to their dance.
Oh yeah.
Which no one else seems to be cluing in on, which I don't remember there being such a mutual intensity in the book. We don't quite get Darcy's motivations until later that he's really in love with her.
We know by then when they're dancing that he has feelings.
Yeah, but it not as intense as no. it gets.
Yeah, still when he proposes a few chapters down the line, you're like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah, you're like, this is not right. This is weird. But there's such an intensity to their eye contact. You get that moment where no one else is dancing and they're just dancing around in an empty room together, which cinematically very appealing to watch, but I think gives that dance more weight for the two of them.
Yeah.
Then we know Lizzie has no feelings there and is like, why am I even dancing with this dude? But in the movie, they're like, there's a spark here.
Oh, yeah.
They're trying to force that spark a little bit too early.
I mean, the spark was already there. The interest was. Lizzie very clearly enjoys poking Darcy.
Yes.
And I think it's one of those things in a book, you can understand the hate takes a lot of energy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why enemies to lovers is such an intriguing movement, because the intensity is always there in terms of the relationships. I do think that the intensity is there in the book, but it's a different type of intensity, and it's not a romantic intensity.
Yes. I think that's the part that feels off in yeah. this, is they've designed it to make it feel romantic, that we're together and no one else is in the room with us.
Right. When in reality, it's her trying to kill him with her laser beam eyes.
And him being like, she's so pretty and I love her so much. And she's staring at me, so she must really like me. Which I guess if I think of it that way, the scene makes sense if you're viewing it from Darcy's perspective. The issue is Pride and Prejudice is not from Darcy's perspective, from Lizzie's. So again, it still feels a little mismatched. And then again, slightly weird, awkward moment where Jane walks away from Bingley and he goes to grab her ass, essentially. And then just like grabs a little bit of her dress. I don't know what the purpose of that was. There is a little bit of sweetness of
the puppy dog.
Yeah, the puppy dog the following, but also creepiness to it that I'm like, why? This does not need to be here. It's a strange moment. And then, yeah, there's some shipping of Mary and Collins that happens. Why? Why? No one should ship this. No one should ship anyone with Collins is the issue. And then we get a lovely Collins proposal, which felt a little rushed, and less him being like, I'm going to insult everything about women and not listen to you. It is a little bit more drawn out in the book of Lizzie having to say no like 6 times versus here she, I think, says it twice. Again, pacing of this take up a lot of time for Lizzie to keep being like, no, no, no. And him be like, you'll come around. You'll come around. You'll come around. But yeah, it's the classic Collins proposal. And I did put that Charlotte, because they go from his proposal to Charlotte coming to the house being like, he's supposed to me pretty quickly. And her giving the speech about, I'm an old maid. Otherwise, I've got no prospects. I'm going to marry this guy. And they do a little bit, I don't know if it's a better job, but a different job of, it seems like Charlotte likes him a little bit more than she does in the books.
Oh yeah. There are moments, if you're watching for it at the dance, where she is watching him and she is drawn to him and curious about him. Nobody is looking at Collins that way.
No. And I think that Charlotte is nice to Collins in the book and tolerates him and has much more patience for him than anyone else. But I don't think she cared for him. And part of me is a little okay with them putting this spin on it, in that I feel a little less sad for Charlotte that she marries this Collins. I don't even know if I'd say happy, but I don't worry about her misery.
Yeah.
I actually feel okay about that, because that is one of the parts of the book. It's just sad. So it feels a little less sad in this, which is good. And then we get to Lady Catherine's house.
Yeah, it happens really quick.
Okay, this is weird.
Judy Dench.
Yeah, just Judy Dench. I thought Fitz was a cute character who I was like, you're exactly how I pictured you to be.
Which is interesting, because he's not quite how I pictured him to be in terms of like when I imagine him.
And maybe I'll like the 1995 version of him better, but I thought he was a good fit for his character. Anne looks really depressed and sad.
Yeah, poor Anne.
The only reason to have her is for Lady Catherine to give the whole speech of he's engaged to my daughter later on. But in the movie, as a physical character, not much there.
I mean, really, in terms of the book, she's just kind of there too. But Wickham has also put it in Lizzie's head about her, which we don't get in this.
There's Lizzie playing the pianoforte.
Yeah.
Which, just painful scene to watch.
Do you mean you didn't get any of the pitter-patter banter in that scene?
No, I mean, I thought that part was fine. It's more Lady Catherine being like, you will play, you will play, you will play. Perfect depiction of Lady Catherine. And then Lizzie playing, and she's not bad, but there's clearly moments where you're like, this was written that she should intentionally mess up.
Yeah, but I mean, that's accurate.
Yeah, I guess so. But yeah, they do have some cute back and forth banter.
See, okay, so again, because I'm comparing to book and I'm comparing to miniseries, I hate that scene.
Okay, why?
I hate the banter in that scene because that scene is supposed to be a little bit of Darcy in his element and has a little bit of confidence coming over to talk to her. And the way that it gets played in this movie is Darcy's awkward, Darcy's awkward, Darcy's awkward. And you never get that break to Darcy is someone who sometimes has confidence and knows how to have conversation if he puts the effort in, which is the entire freaking point of that discussion of putting in effort and practicing with strangers. The point is that if Darcy did that, like he has with Lizzie over the course of their relationship, he could converse with strangers more easily because he is someone who, when he is comfortable, can do that. And that's the part of the purpose of that scene that doesn't get conveyed in this adaptation. I just can't, I don't like watching that scene because it's just, he's too awkward.
I do like that Lizzie kind of calls him out a little bit on his awkwardness at one point. And she does say, as your aunt suggests, maybe you should practice.
Right. But in the book, he has the snap back to her where he says, we neither of us perform to strangers. And again, he's confident in that moment when he's talking to her, which I don't think gets conveyed at all in this adaptation.
He's just awkward.
Yeah.
But then we get the best scene in the movie of him coming to the Collins' house, being there really awkwardly, seeing Charlotte come home and just leaving.
Yeah, he comes in, he goes, this is a charming house. And Lizzie's like, yeah, do you want to sit down? And he's like, bye.
And just leave.
It is the best.
It is such a weird, strange moment, but so funny.
And that is a part of what happens in the book. He does have this moment where he comes, catches her by herself. They sit awkwardly and they do talk about the fact that his aunt did a lot to make the house a nice place, and they sit awkwardly in silence, and then Charlotte comes back and he leaves.
Yes.
But they did it so well in this movie where it's just, you feel Lizzie's, what the fuck was that?
Yeah, it's like, what is this guy doing here? What is happening? And even Charlotte's reaction of, what just happened?
Yeah.
And then we have this whole outdoor rain scene where he proposes, I love you most ardently. And I did write down with the rain and the way that the proposal is written in this, because his proposal in the book is quite long and him insulting her for like 5 pages where you're like, Darcy, your foot is in your mouth. Just stop talking. But in this, he says 2 insults and then is like, but I love you. And there's something about it that it's almost romantic with the rain coming down and the like eye contact, and almost have this moment where you're like, yeah, Lizzie could say yes, versus in the book you're like, do not say yes to this, Lizzie, this guy is horrible, what is going on?
Well, also in the book he has caught her when she's at home alone because she's resting because she's not feeling well. There's also a layer of disrespect in the way that he shows up to propose in the book.
There's also this moment in the movie where you're like, are they gonna kiss?
Oh yeah.
Like, so like, why are we putting some sexual tension here if they're gonna kiss or not kiss?
So the story, I don't know how true it is because I haven't obviously watched the behind the scenes in a long time, but the story is, one, I've heard that it's their screen test together of the two of them was that scene. I don't think that's true because I don't think you waste that much rain. Two, that they just let the actors go and the actors got so into it that they forgot that they were supposed to be angry with each other and they did almost kiss. So that moment when they're like leaning in to be like, and you're like, are they gonna kiss? Is actually because the actors had to remember that's how we're at. Yes.
Right.
and pull back. So that tension is something that gets talked about a lot. Okay. And like, but it is a weird thing to keep in there. Again, because they are playing these characters so differently. They're playing these characters, like you said, in terms of like ballroom scene, that there's a mutual romantic tension here. Whereas we know in the books, Lizzie is continually loathing him. There's tension, but it's not romantic tension. They don't do so much of the enemies to lovers in the adaptation. Yeah. It's just kind of Lizzie's almost fighting it.
Yes.
And Darcy finally convinces her to give in to her affection. That's not really, she disliked you.
Yeah, that's not how this happened. And then the mirror scene happens.
Again, it's one of those moments that I really dislike in the movie where I'm like, what the heck? Where he comes to the house late at night, dude, put on some clothes, and drops off this letter and then starts to read the letter as a like narration in the mirror. And then she turns around and he's gone like a ghost.
And he's riding a horse really fast away. There's part of me that wonders if, and I don't know if it's the actor or his stunt double, if one of them was just really into like riding a horse really fast. And that's why they put it in the movie a couple times.
I don't know. Maybe it's supposed to demonstrate his flight response in the face of confrontation. But that part where he is the one who is narrating the letter, cool. But the fact that they had him start doing it to the mirror, please be assured that this is not a renewal of the affections which you found. And he starts reading the letter, words that we know are in the letter, and then rides off on the horse and continues reading it. It's just so weird.
I did write down, is he a ghost? It's one of those moments where you're like, it's now a psychological thriller where you're not sure if Lizzie's sane.
And she does that moment where she like turns around and... And he's gone. Yeah. It's like, this could be a horror movie. And then if you go back and you think about like those scenes where he's following her at the ball and where he just like appears at the ball to ask her to dance, like, yeah, Darcy's actually a serial killer.
Yeah.
Like, it is so weird.
It's like weird serial killer who actually decides, oh, I'm in love with you, so I won't murder this one.
Yeah. You feel like you're going a little off the edge with Lizzie too. And then the letter's not great.
No, I wrote that Georgiana's story is much weaker in it. It's kind of like, she was young and she was not great. But you don't get that sense of, no, something really bad happened.
He could have ruined her life.
It's kind of like, meh, it would have been bad, but meh. It doesn't carry as much.
There's no weight behind it.
Yeah.
And again, I almost feel like this movie didn't need Wickham at all. If you removed Wickham from the storyline, he just needs to come back and get Jane and Bingley together and that's their reconciliation. You don't need him rescuing Lydia as a demonstration of him going and correcting these things that he doesn't actually have to. He rescued her whole family. You don't need that in this adaptation. You could have removed Wickham from the story altogether and it wouldn't have changed the movie that much.
Well, especially since they build that Lizzie already kind of maybe has some feelings
in there. Right. We do get in terms of when Lizzie sees him again at Pemberley, but we only get that because of his amazing letter, because he is refuting her prejudices. There's no real prejudice in this that I can find in terms of Lizzie being prejudiced against Darcy. Anyway.
And even we go into after this, Lizzie goes home, Lydia's going off to Brighton. Even that part of the story, you're kind of like, okay.
Yeah, there's no direness there where Lizzie has to beg her father. You don't get that same sort of desperation.
Right. She asks her father not to let her go. It almost seems more because Mary is upset about it versus, no, this is a bad idea.
Yeah.
And I think part of it is because they've set up Mr. Bennett to be a little bit more lovable, a little bit more caring. You don't get the sense of he's not doing what he should do to protect his daughter in this situation.
Yeah.
And you could just remove that entire part of this and it would probably still be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, not much changes. And then the line of, what are men to rocks and mountains? And then they show Lizzie with rocks and mountains.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay. This movie at times will show us and at times will tell us. And sometimes both.
Yeah. It's a really lovely scene.
Lovely. Beautiful. Breathtaking. I want to know where it was filmed. I want to go there. Great. Don't know what it's doing in it.
Yeah, there were a lot of when they stop and have their apples and cheese underneath the giant tree.
Again, people sitting under trees. Why?
And it's very much, it feels almost like the reason that that scene is in there is because they wanted to have the tree in the movie and not because there's an actual significance to that scene. Because there really isn't.
Yeah, they talk about going to Pemberley and Lizzie being like, no, let's not. And then being like, no, we're going to. They could have had that conversation anywhere.
Well, we have it at the hotel in the book, but they make it seem like they're just like moving through town. When in reality, they were staying there for several days because Mrs. Gardner had friends. They weaken the Gardners as characters in the movie. Again, I get they don't have a lot of space, but there's some really weird parts of this. Continue.
Pemberley's huge.
Yeah, that's accurate, I feel like.
Which I feel is accurate, but because it's the first home that we've seen of that magnitude, because we don't actually see the outside of Lady Catherine's house, I don't think, it does continue to exasperate that wealth disparity between the Bennets and Darcy, dramatically so.
It's a billionaire romance.
Yeah, definitely. And then we get all of the strange naked statues.
Yeah, Darcy doesn't have paintings in this adaptation. He has naked men.
Why? I don't get it.
It was a style choice for sure.
It was a style choice, but there's a large part of me that just thinks the filmmakers were like, you know what this movie needs? Butts.
That's the quote for this episode. You know what this movie means?
Butts. But you know what we can't put in this movie and not make it rated R? Real butts. We get fake butts in this movie.
They couldn't get Colin Firth, so they got some naked statues.
So it's very strange.
Yeah, and then Lizzie has this weird moment with this bust of Darcy.
Which, again, why is there a bust of Darcy in the middle of the room with his eyes are not complete? And it drove me nuts. They're just like... They're just blank holes for eyes. Like, they didn't carve an actual eye into it. Again, horror movie. It could be a demonic ghost.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
This is what it actually is. Real Darcy is trapped inside the bust. Ghost Darcy has been following Lizzie around this whole movie.
She's gonna kiss the bust to set him free.
I don't know if she needs to kiss the bust. Something needs to happen to the bust to set him free. But you know how she'll know that he's really in there? One of those creepy ass eyes will like flake off or something because he figures out he can blink.
So did Darcy's statue give you some nightmares?
No, it was just weird.
It is. It's bizarre.
It's the strangest. There are lots of awkward moments in this movie. The statues are just the strangest moment in this movie. It is strange. It's weird. I don't get it. And you told me that people get this bust, this bust.
No. You can get fans of the Matthew McFadden bust. You can get little ones like bookends and things like that. And I definitely have thought about getting one. And I think as like a fan thing, it's cool. It makes sense. It's cute. As a movie thing, it is very weird.
Okay. I was thinking people were getting these full size busts, and that seemed weird. And maybe the eyes would seem less creepy in a miniaturized version of it. I don't know. I'd have to see them. But it is a strange moment in this movie that is just strange, because I get in the book, she's looking at these images being like, wow, he's actually really hot. Damn it, I like him.
Well, it's the moment she looks at his portrait and she notices him smiling sometimes like she had caught him smiling at her.
Yes. The issue is that does not translate to this bust. This bust, it's not a bad bust, minus the creepy eyes, but it does not convey anything of, oh, the man I love.
Right. I could see myself standing next to this man. I am walking around his head.
It's also one of those things where, you know what's going to be even creepier? One day, there will be a Lizzie bust to go with it.
I think in the scene, Mrs. Reynolds says, and here's Georgiana. And they like walk off, her and the gardeners. So there must be a bust of Georgiana too.
Yeah. It's so weird.
It's weird. We do miss the sort of connection to Wickham in that we don't see, but the little tiny painted pieces that Darcy kept in his dad's study and left untouched and Wickham was there. We don't get that attachment to Pemberley. And again, could have just dropped Wickham from the entire story. He seems irrelevant. Yeah, we move from the bust to Lizzie basically just wandering their house
and creepily watching Georgiana play the piano from behind a half wall. Very strange and weird. And again, Georgiana's not supposed to be there. So it's like, what's she doing here? No one's supposed to be home. It's why she agreed to go into the home. And yet there's Georgiana playing the piano. She didn't just stroll up halfway through their visit and is like, you know what I'm gonna go do? Play the piano. She's been there for a while. It is weird and is creepy. And then she gets caught by Darcy.
I do like that. I think this adaptation does a good job of showing the affection between the siblings.
Mm-hmm.
And in the fact that Lizzie is creeping, we do get like a candid brother-sister moment where you can very clearly tell that they love each other. And then again, it's that horror moment where someone is watching them through a slit and they're both like, and then Lizzie just bolts
and runs away.
And Darcy chases her.
Yep. And then she's almost crying when they're talking. Again, felt a little too intense and weird for that moment for me. And he's like, let me walk you home, or like, take my carriage home and it'll be fine. And she's like, no, I will walk all the way back to town.
I like walking. And he's like, I know. And then he gets in his carriage and beats her there and has dinner with her aunt and uncle. Also, why the fuck did her aunt and uncle leave without her?
Yeah, she doesn't tell anyone she's going for this walk.
Walks home.
Yeah. Was no one worried about where did Lizzie go for all these hours? She could have been in the middle of a field, not knowing where she was, lost. She doesn't get home until after dark. And then Mrs. Gardner is just like, there's something pleasant about his mouth when he talks. What? What? What is that line? I don't get it.
I get the impression, because they made her older, that it's supposed to be her way of commenting on the fact that he has a hot bod without being like, he is a hot bod. She's like, I liked staring at his lips. The implication being she wanted to be on them.
Yeah, again, weird. Why? And then he's all like, you're going to come to my house, meet my sister, blah, blah, blah. And they make Georgiana very outgoing and not like her brother.
Yeah.
Which...
she's supposed to be super awkward. She's, well, super shy.
Yes. Which I get that in this adaptation, she plays very little role. Again, if we removed the Wickham storyline, Darcy almost wouldn't even need to have a sister.
Well, I mean, I like big brothers, so...
Yeah, like, it's fine in that way, but they could have just had the moment of the two of them being nice with each other.
This is something that we like about him.
And so they make Georgiana this very outgoing person, and it's weird. I didn't understand it. Lizzie gets the letter from home about Lydia.
Yeah, he goes back with them. Darcy, again, because they move so quickly, you don't get that moment of Darcy being there with Lizzie when Lizzie gets the letter. It's this whole weird production with her aunt and her uncle there as well.
Yeah, and she's just walking around in this circle and Darcy's sitting and standing and sitting and standing and sitting and standing and sitting and standing. And
she's crying.
Yeah, and she can't get a word out. And then they're like, all right, race off.
The moment when she's done explaining and Darcy just says, this is all my fault. It's like, we're not supposed to be there yet. That is supposed to be the thing that he talks about at the end during his second proposal. Lizzie's supposed to despair at this moment that she's lost him and lost the possibility of being together. But they just shorthand it to Darcy being like, this is all my fault.
Well, and Lizzie being like, it's also my fault.
So weird and such a stilted moment. I hate the letter moment. The letter scene moment is so ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. And everything in this movie feels a little played up from how it is in the book and all the characters do. And this scene feels a little more theatrical, maybe, in its decisions. And we get home. It's pretty much as described in the book, I feel like, where Mr. Bennett's gone to town to figure things out. Mrs. Bennett's laying in bed. And the daughters are all kind of being like, Mom, you have to get up out of bed. You can't just, and she's like, no, I will take to bed forever. And they get the letter from Mr. Gardner as Mr. Bennett's coming home. Timeline's real quick here. And all of that plays out, although shortened, the essence of it is true to the book, which kind of moves it along. And Lydia comes home, which we missed the part where Mr. Bennett, and again, I think it's in this bid to make him seem like a little bit more lovable. We missed the bid where he's like, she's not coming into this house.
Where he's actually angry.
Yeah.
And we missed the bit where he's angry with himself and that moment of him also recognizing he hasn't been a good parent, but also he's probably not going to change anything about himself. I mean, I don't want to say that the character is shallow. The character is just different.
Yeah. And then Lydia comes home and she's horrible and Lydia in lots of ways. I think her character stayed pretty true to her essence.
Well, because her character is a 16-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, that's her character. The essence of her character is just a teenager.
Yeah.
And she's irritating. She's annoying. You get that moment where she conveys all the information and you're like, oh, that's how we're doing it. Okay. Again, super shortened timelines around things.
There's this weird Kitty is lusting over Wickham tension thing that feels weird. And you're like, I don't have enough. Again, that charisma's missing from Wickham, where I'm like, this makes no sense why Kitty would be interested in this guy.
Also, the guy who just ruined her sister, not someone she should be. Yeah, they shortened the entire talk that Lizzie has, where Wickham tries to come back and get her on his side again, not realizing that she's had these interactions with Darcy, and where she explains that she knows Darcy and he is as much as he ever was, and she makes him angry. You realize she's got the upper hand in this relationship. They shorten that to him entering the room, seeing her turning away from him, and him leaving the room. That's it.
No conversation at all.
Yeah.
That entire, I think it's a full chapter, at least, gets turned into a look. And Lydia and Wickham leave, and there is that moment where they depict that he's likely to be physically abusive, which feels pretty accurate. So that didn't feel out of character. Maybe out of character for this character?
No, that felt totally in character for this character, because it's almost like this character has rage that's super close to the surface, is the impression that you get from this character. In the book, whether or not Wickham would be physically abusive, don't know, but you get the impression that if he was, it would be like explosive moments, drunk moments, where he is enraged in flashes. Whereas you get the impression that this guy is making you walk on eggshells.
Yeah, that makes sense, actually.
Again, just a very different character.
And then we hear that Bingley's back in town.
Yay!
Hooray! Bingley. We get this really great moment where Bingley and Darcy are coming to the house, and all the Bennett women have been lounging about, relaxed. And then Bingley and Darcy enter the room, and they're just sitting there, like, so stiff and rigid. It is so absurd.
So I made a meme about that scene where it's before the Zoom call and everybody's like streamed out, and then it's like Zoom call and everybody's like sitting prim and proper, because that's what it is, right? It's not the reality that they're showing. They're showing the prim and proper moment.
And we get the very cute Darcy Bingley role playing out by the river.
Of all the things they changed or they added, that's the one that I'm like, yes, I needed this.
Yeah. It's so cute. And just Bingley stumbling over his words and trying to be like, okay, so if she says this, then I'm going to do this. And it's like that. And this is how this is going to go. And I hope that this happens. And how do I do this? It's so cute.
Well, and also I love that moment because it shows what kind of friend Darcy is, where he's like, okay, I'll help you rehearse your proposal.
Right. I guess I'll pretend to be her.
But he just does it and he's like, Mr. Bingley. And he just goes along with it. And it's one of those moments where you're like, I understand why these two opposites are friends.
Yes, it's just lovely. And then we get the most awkward proposal. Where he just like walks in the room, essentially is like, hello.
Can everybody else leave, please?
Yeah, everyone leave. And then gets on one knee.
Doesn't he say, I've been an abominable ass?
Something like that, yeah.
And then no further explanation to explain what I did wrong or that I understand what I did wrong. I'm just going to propose to you.
And does she say yes 1,000 times yes? And I love that to true Bennett fashion, everyone's listening outside the door. And as soon as she says yes, bursts in, which again, I think we miss some of that build up to it, but it is so cute. They're cute.
It's them.
Yeah, it's yeah. Very them. And then we get this moment that we described as sitting by trees, staring longingly at houses.
Yeah, because Lizzie's outside sitting by a tree, playing with a stick. And then Darcy's looking at the house and then walking away. And then he looks at the house.
And we don't know what tree she's sitting by, but there is a tree that looks pretty much like the tree she's sitting under that I'm like, can't he just see her sitting under that tree? Like, this feels a little weird. Yeah, that just felt weird. There's the implied Mr. and Mrs. Bennett having sex scene. The Catherine de Bourgh coming in the middle of the night.
Yeah, just, hey, I need to speak to Elizabeth. Hey, are you marrying Darcy? Well, you can't. And they cut out some of the best lines.
Yeah, they didn't put obstinate headstrong girl in there.
Yeah.
Which felt like a missed opportunity.
You could have given such a good speech to Judi Dench.
Yeah, I think that that scene could have gone very differently. Because both Judi Dench and Keira Knightley are good actors. They could have really fleshed that out to that full potential of how that goes in the book.
Yeah. And then Lizzie storms off afterwards and tells her family, leave me alone!
Which, again, I don't get. Like, why is she so angry? It makes no sense. Because in the book, she's maybe a little peeved that Lady Catherine.
She is raging, but she's raging on the inside. Yeah. That's what Elizabeth does.
Well, she's raging on the inside, but also, I think, at least when I read it, there was this part of, I think Lizzie also kind of likes putting Lady Catherine in her place.
Oh, yeah.
And so she wouldn't fly off the handle at her family when Lady Catherine leaves, because she'd just be like, yeah, that's exactly how that was meant to go.
Well, it's also in the book, Jane is occupied with Bingley. Her mother is barely paying attention to anything. Her father's back in his library. Nobody's actually paying attention to Lizzie and what's going on in Lizzie's life, which is why this scene plays so poorly in this movie in the weird way that it does, because her family knows something's going on. Whereas in the book, it's just like, oh, she must have been conveying news about Collins and Charlotte. How kind of her. And nobody's even clocked this visit as something significant. It's an afterthought later when Mr. Bennett's like, oh, that's why his aunt came here. Again, they didn't really need her.
No, because they had her come in the middle of the night too. It like gives it this more serious air to it for the family. So it's not like they could pretend that this is a like, yeah, whatever visit.
Yeah.
You don't show up at someone's house in the middle of the night being like, I need to talk to you. Just doesn't happen that way.
No, especially everyone's in bed. Yeah. They're lighting candles to come to the door.
Yeah.
Who has died?
Actually.
Yeah.
And then we get the moment that I describe as the perfect horror movie moment in this. There have been several, but this one in particular, where Lizzie is walking through a field meadow at sunrise. So it's still kind of a little dusky, a little
foggy.
This is where the zombies come out. Like, this is how she dies.
It's that moment of the girl who wanders off from the group getting killed by the slasher.
Yeah, 100%. And so we get Lizzie walking out, and then Darcy is walking through the same field towards her. And I wrote down, is this supposed to be the sexy Darcy walk? Because he's got a little bit of a sway to it or something. I'm like, it feels weird.
Again, Darcy, put on some freaking clothes before you come over to someone's house.
Yeah, weird.
Where's your necktie?
Just weird. And then he essentially is like, are you still interested? I'm still interested. And she kisses his hand in response. It's like a strange moment.
So I really love Darcy's proposal in this, even though it's not the proposal. There's not the same context behind it. But the, I love you. Cool. This is a really romantic proposal and a great moment where he's confessing. And then she just goes, well then, and takes his hand. Your hands are cold. Is that a yes? Is that a no? It's so weird.
It's a very weird.
You just got this romantic proposal. Did you dissociate? And your brain's like, comment on something. Comment on something. This is not consent.
You have not actually accepted this proposal.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Are you in shock? Are you in shock? Are you okay, Lizzie?
Yeah. Very strange. And then we get him sitting outside her house.
Which, he goes in, he talks to Mr. Bennet, and then comes out, and they have this weird staring moment. And Darcy, could you smile a little bit more? And then he's sitting outside with the puppy. I actually really love that scene, because that's not what happens in the book. He has that moment where he leans over, and he's like, your father wants to talk to you. In the book, where he comes in, and they're all together. But I do think it's like this really sweet, cute moment, where he's nervous, and I don't know. It demonstrates that he actually cares, I feel like.
I think what I miss from it, though, is we don't get that moment where they're actually secretly engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't get those moments where they're like, hee-hee, we're so excited.
They go from not talking to each other because Lizzie doesn't like him, to not talking to each other because Darcy is awkward, to talking to each other, to not talking to each other because they both like each other and it's awkward, to not talking to each other because they're engaged and it's a secret and they can't let anyone know. There's a lot of like the ways that the distance between them changes in terms of the tension that you don't get.
And then Lizzie goes to her father, and there's one line that just irked me, which was the "we're so similar" line that she gives. And honestly, what popped into my head is I'm a huge fan of some of the cheesy reality TV love competition type shows. Not talking The Bachelor, but even worse than that. And it's always something that people will say after they've known someone for like a day of, we're just so similar. It's why this is gonna work. Those relationships never work out on those shows. And so just hearing that, I was like, oh, this relationship's not gonna work out. They don't know each other.
Right. And I think that's because of the pace of this film, I never felt like I got to know the characters.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't feel like these characters actually do know each other. We don't get those moments where they have actually spent significant time together. And to be like, we're so similar, it is the most insincere. No, you're not.
Well, but that's why they work, is that they're not.
Exactly. You compliment each other. What do you mean we're so similar? Is this supposed to be the shorthand for you had prejudice and he had pride, and your prejudice was also coming from your place of pride, and he had prejudice against you because he was prideful? Like, is that what this shorthand is supposed to be by we're so similar? You're explaining the entire conflict in this line?
It does not come across. But I will say, Keira Knightley does a convincing job of being smitten. Right. Very excited and happy to be marrying Darcy. So at least you're convinced she's happy about it, which is good. So we watched the British version. So it just ends with Mr. Bennet laughing to himself.
Yeah, we still actually don't know Lizzie's answer. It's a weird place to end it, but I mean, it's a weird movie. So I showed Teresa the American version with the weird kissy kiss and the nicknames.
Yeah, Goddess Divine, Mrs. Darcy. Weird. It was weird, and I don't understand it.
Yeah, and I don't think either ending is fulfilling.
No.
The ending where Mr. Bennet is just laughing is weird and you feel incomplete. And then the ending where you get this moment where Mr. and Mrs. Darcy are on a balcony at Pemberley post-coitus, just in their pajamas, hanging out after they've probably just been naked. And the moment feels, one, way too modern.
Oh, yeah.
And two, maybe it's just my loathsomeness of nicknames, but also it just feels icky.
It reminds me a little bit of Bridgerton when you said that it feels a little too modern, in that it is taking a period piece and trying to add the sexy moment into it, and it doesn't work.
You just need to end it at their wedding, or with them, with Georgiana at Pemberley being a family. There are better ways to end this. Anyway.
Yeah, it was a weird, weird ending to all of this.
Yeah. So, final thoughts?
My final thoughts are,
you know what this movie needs?
Butts. That's my final thought on this. Butts, 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 butts.
So, we enjoyed the movie. We obviously have some criticisms, but when don't we?
Despite having criticisms, I enjoyed this movie. I thought it was a good movie, a weird movie, but a good movie. I enjoyed watching it.
Do you think if you hadn't read Pride and Prejudice and you had seen this movie, you would have enjoyed it more?
I think some of the things I would have felt the same, like the awkwardness, the like creepy bust statue's eyes would still bother me. I'd probably still be like, yep, they just needed some butts in this. I probably would not pick up on some of the things that, having read the book, that I'm like, oh, but you're missing that. It probably would have felt on par with the type of average rom-com out there.
I think I will say that that feeling towards the movie actually solidifies you more as a Jainite than the hand scene, than the excellent boiled potatoes. Because what you're saying is you prefer Jane Austen. Because the excellent boiled potatoes and the hand flex are parts of the movie. They're not parts of Austen. So yeah, I would say that you're qualifying as a Jainite so far.
I would watch it again. I wouldn't necessarily seek it out as a like go-to.
Well, we will see how you do with the miniseries. You're gonna have to commit a little bit more time because I think it's 6 hours long.
Maybe we'll do an episode at a time.
We'll either do an episode at a time or we'll do half of it and half of it, but you've got some commitment there. We are gonna start reading Northanger Abbey in the next little bit. We will announce that on the Instagram when we are starting to read. So if anybody wants to follow along, it's not just going to immediately release an episode. We're really excited. I'm really excited for Northanger. Oh my God, there's so much good stuff in there.
I'm excited for Mr. Tilney.
So where can people follow us, Teresa?
So people can follow us on Instagram at Austen Therapy Podcast and can follow Kate's meme account at Austen Therapy.
Thanks for listening. We love you so much. We'll see you next time.
Bye. Bye.